we're going to take a look at polyamorous relationships in the United States.
For many people, contemporary times have meant less adherence to a standard monogamous relationship with no premarital sex and one partner for a lifetime.
But today, things like premarital sex are common in mainstream culture, and many people engage in what is called serial monogamy, a series of relationships over a lifetime. Some also engage in polyamory, with multiple romantic relationships at one time.
Our next guest spent 15 years studying these relationships. She's Elizabeth Sheff, a global expert on polyamory and the author of The Polyamorists Next Door, Inside Multiple Partner Relationships and Families. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. Well, why don't you define for us what polyamory is?
Polyamory is openly conducted, non-monogamous relationships that everyone who is affected by them ideally knows about them. So they're negotiated and people have talked about them before they jump into them.
And how is that different from polygamy?
Polygamy is generally practiced as polygyny, which is one man with multiple wives. Hardly ever is polygamy practiced as polyandry, or one woman with multiple husbands. Polyamory, a lot of polys there.
Yeah.
polyamory is different from both of those in a few ways. For one thing, those are forms of marriage, whereas polyamory, sometimes people are married and sometimes they're not. They can be together without any kind of formalized commitment. And secondly, and most importantly, polyamory is gender equitable in that both women and men can have multiple partner relationships. And generally, in the history of just cultures across time and all over the world, mostly polygamy has been men with multiple wives, but in very few places and very few times have women had multiple husbands. So polyamory is pretty rare that way.
So you've been studying this for 15 years, but I'm curious to find out how old are some of the oldest references to polyamory, and where might we find some of those references?
It depends on if you're looking specifically to the word polyamory or to more gender equitable non-monogamy. The Oneida community in New York was one of the first non-monogamous communes in the United States. John Humphrey Noyes was its founder. And that was, I'm going to make this date up. I'm going to say 1874, but I'm not sure about that. Sometime in those late 1800s.
Whenever I don't know a date, I always just go straight to late 1800s, and it almost always works out.
Uh-huh.
So does that mean it's a relatively recent phenomenon then?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
In terms of, the arc of history, it sounds like a relatively recent phenomenon then.
Yes, absolutely. Not only in the arc of history, but the word itself, polyamory, was coined, I would say, in the mid to late 1980s. There's a little bit of disagreement over who exactly coined it. Most people think Morning Glory Ravenheart did, but it's possible that it was coined by I can't remember his name, in the Carista community. And if you'd like details, I actually have a pretty lengthy blog post on this on my website if you want to read the history of polyamory.
Yeah, we'll get that address from you towards the end of the interview, because I imagine a lot of people will want to check that out. So in the time that you've been studying these types of relationships, have you noticed a change within that time? I mean, is this a definition, a term that is continuing to evolve?
Yes, continuing to evolve in part because a lot of the people who do it don't necessarily agree with each other about precisely what it means. So there's some community disagreement over what exactly it is and who gets to decide. And also, I think the biggest change has been a much larger group of people practicing it. It's much more known, much more culturally recognizable. When I first started speaking about polyamory, hardly anyone in the audience had ever heard of it, hardly ever. And now pretty much at least a quarter of the audience members generally have already heard of it, often sometimes larger. So yes, far more people practicing it now. And it's looking like it's starting to become more diverse. It's been a very white, middle and upper middle class thing to do so far. And it's just becoming, I think, more diverse now.
And as it becomes more common, are there legal challenges to polyamory?
Absolutely. Up until this point, being taken to court for potential loss of custody of your children, if someone is contesting child custody involving a polyamorous family, almost universally people have lost their children in those cases. Just last year, though, the first case of which I'm aware went to trial or went up before the judge, and the polyamorous family kept their child. So, in addition to child custody, people can also be subject to things like you can get fired, job loss, and other kind of discriminatory acts that can lead to legal problems.
We are talking with Elizabeth Scheff. She's a global expert on polyamory and author of The Polyamorists Next Door, Inside Multiple Partner Relationships and Families.
And we'd like to hear your thoughts or questions about this topic, too. Do you have any experience with open or with polyamorous relationships? Do you have any questions about the polyamorous community? Do you wonder how widespread it is? Give us a call with a question or a comment for our guest. Our phone number is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And don't forget, you can also post comments on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time, and we're back with Elizabeth Scheff, global expert on polyamory and author of The Polyamorists Next Door, Inside Multiple Partner Relationships and Families.
And we'd like to hear your thoughts or questions on this topic. Do you have experience with these types of multiple partner relationships? Can you imagine them happening in your community? And do you have any questions about what that community might look like? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. And don't forget, you can post your comments on the Central Time Facebook page. Elizabeth Scheff, one of the questions I have for you before we get to calls is sort of a general one regarding how visible these relationships might be to the community where these families live. Is this something that people feel the need to sort of keep on the down low, or is this something that, depending on where they live, they might be very open outside of the family about it?
I would say both. If they live in Seattle or San Francisco or New York or Boston, any city with a large number of sexual minorities already, they're more likely to be open. In fact, Seattle has the first poly neighborhood that I'm aware of, because the houses are so large that they're great for multiple adults with kids. But I would say most often, poly families are not easily recognized. Like if you see a woman on the street with two men, the first thought that pops into your mind is not, oh, there's a woman with her two husbands. You're much more likely to think there's a woman with her husband and his brother or her brother or their friend. You know, lots of other explanations occur to you before woman with two husbands.
And in terms of being a sexual minority, do you have any idea as to what the numbers look like or a percentage might look like across the country? I mean, is this a big, big population, or is it still just a subset?
I would say it's still pretty subset. I think that there are fewer polyamorists in general than swingers. And it's really hard to say how many polyamorists or sexual minorities there are in general, but I've looked at several different estimates that look at the number of bisexual people in reported polyamorous populations and then extrapolates from the number of bisexual people in the states. And those, depending on how that's calculated, they come up with between 2 million and like 9.3 million polyamorists in the United States. So even the most generous estimate is probably less than 10 million, which is pretty sub, but far more substantial than they were 10 years ago.
And that's quite a range in that estimate there.
Let's,
yes. Let's take some phone calls. We have Sarah in Madison waiting to talk to us. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I have experience with polyamorous relationships in the Madison area. And I'm kind of just wondering how these relationships and the prevalence of these relationships tend to look throughout the lifespan. It tends to be very accepted in my peer group in the younger 20s and things like that. And I'm wondering if polyamorous families and things like that see the same level of acceptance in the normal city communities, especially in neighborhoods, raising families and things like that.
Elizabeth, do you know?
Yes, that's a great question. I would say that non-monogamy in general is more accepted among younger people, and that there's definitely a segment of people who may call themselves poly for now, or may just be poly for now but not identify that way, who are basically trying out polyamory. They're checking it out while they're in their 20s or whatever, want to play the field, but they're not having children in a polyamorous relationship. They think it's good for kind of sowing their wild oats, but they don't necessarily want to use it as a family style. So an entire segment of people will leave polyamory when they have children. Ironically, and another entire segment will become polyamorous when they have children because they find someone they fall in love with, and it just kind of happens to them, and they co-parent.
Maybe a little bit of a technical question here, but as you talk about whether or not polyamory is acceptable among older populations, how easy is it then to know whether or not people are polyamorous versus simply not reporting it because they feel that they would not be accepted?
That's probably one of the main things that makes it so difficult to count the number of polyamorous people. Not only do people feel safe reporting it, would they be rejected by their families or face some other kind of stigma, but to whom would they report it? Like, is anyone asking this question?
Well,
I'm actually trying to ask the question,
yeah.
But getting a question on a national research survey that would give a representative sample of the United States is really expensive. And so I'm trying to start a Kickstarter campaign to raise enough money to fund that question.
I see. I was wondering how difficult it might be for you to do this type of research.
Tremendously. Traditional funding sources have not been interested at all, unfortunately, in funding this research. And I have tried, my goodness, have I tried. But it's very hard to find research funding for sexual minorities in general, but especially because in my study I found that these families were rather resilient, meaning there's a psychological theory that talks about resilience as an element of communication and ability to flex with changes over time can contribute to family resilience. And that's where my data pointed. So that's what I talked about. I didn't see child abuse or alcoholism or, you know, all sorts of other things that there's more plentiful funding for these catastrophic or these, you know, really negative outcomes. So if those had been happening, maybe I could have gotten funding for that. But I was not about to manufacture that to get money.
Let's go back to the phones right now. And Chad is with us from Green Bay. Hi, Chad.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. What's your question?
My question is almost drawn into a concern question. My sister is in the realm of polyamory. She'd been married, had a girlfriend. They broke up. She's now still dating the girlfriend and yet has a new boyfriend, has a two-year-old daughter from the marriage. You know, I have a hard time talking to her about the situation in regard to my niece and how that's going to affect her developmentally or, you know, anywhere. So I'm kind of asking, in your research or anything, have you come across anything with regard to children in these relationships and growing up?
Chad, that's a good question, and if I could expand on that, how do children understand these polyamorous relationships that they might be involved with?
You know, that's a great question, and the answer is it really depends on how old the child is. The two-year-old, it's pretty much not going to affect her. She's not going to be able to distinguish her mother's dates from other people in the social environment. She's just not, you know, little kids are they see the world through how it relates to them. So their people in their lives won't necessarily be like mom's boyfriend, but might be the one who plays with Legos or something like that. You know, the kids aren't thinking, small children aren't thinking about dating. They don't even get it. Tweens, by the time kids are like 8 through 11, they're really starting to notice that their families are different. But it doesn't seem to be that difficult for them to manage that information with their own peers. They, back to how polyamorous families aren't that recognizable, their peers don't tend to ask about it. They assume the families are divorced. And then by the time they're teenagers, they're very aware of the family dynamic and how different the family is. Generally, parents who become polyamorous, they've already got children, they will take their dating very slow and not introduce their partners to their children until they know this is a pretty darn serious relationship. So much like people who get divorced and date, don't bring everyone home and don't, you know, bring everyone to Thanksgiving or something. These polyamorous parents use a lot of time getting to know people and keeping them at a distance from the children unless and until they're going to be integrated into the family.
What are some of the largest families that you encountered?
Let's see. Generally, families often, especially if they're living together, will often top out at 4 or 5. A four-person relationship is called a quad, and 5 or more are called morsomes. And they are generally, the larger a relationship gets, the more rare it is. So the most common form is the open couple, like a male-female couple who've been together for however long, but they're in a committed relationship, and then they date other people as well. The smallest is the most common.
Well, we had a caller who couldn't stay with us. He had a question on how do polyamorous deal with jealousy? Is that an issue in these relationships?
It's a major issue in these relationships, and generally they talk about it. Is how they deal with everything. Polyamorists are big on communication. So they will talk about why someone is feeling jealous, and they'll look at if there are logistical things they can do to ameliorate the jealousy. So, for instance, if somebody gets really jealous when their husband is out on a date with his girlfriend, if the wife is at home, you know, like folding laundry and eating macaroni and cheese, that's going to set her up to feel more jealous. Whereas if she's drinking wine with her friends, you know, someone has come over, or she also goes out and sees a movie with a friend or something, then that can help her feel less jealous if she's not sitting at home stewing. So they look at practical things they can do, and they look at the emotions behind the jealousy. Is this coming from a place of insecurity? Then what to do to help feel more secure? Does that person need some reassurance? Often polyamorists will reassure each other. Does that person need to seek inner strength? You know, often it's a combination of multiple things.
We've only got about a minute or so left, but one of the questions, you mentioned communication. What else do these types of relationships need to make them work? The level of complexity just seems to be a lot more than a lot of us are used to.
Definitely. So they take a lot of care and tending, these relationships. Communication is a big one, and honesty. Honesty is crucial for the kind of trust it takes to be with multiple partners. There are so many sexually transmitted infections that you've got to trust if your partner says they're using condoms with other people that they're actually doing it. And if they prove to be dishonest about something, how can you trust that they're actually using condoms as well? Or so honesty is key in these relationships, and being willing to put a lot of effort into them.
Well, thank you.
Having a relationship as a hobby, almost.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Sheff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Elizabeth Sheff is a global expert on polyamory and author of The Polyamorists Next Door, Inside Multiple Partner Relationships and Families.